Jai Ma. So we continue with our reading of collected works of the mother, and today we start with Words of the Mother, volume 3, which is volume 15 from collected works, and volume 3, Words of the Mother, volume 3. So this has many basically letters, messages, and on various subjects, and some long conversations. So the editor's note is, I'll just read. This volume is divided into two parts. Part one consists primarily of brief written statement by the mother on various aspects of spiritual life, and they are written mainly between 1930s and 70s, which is a long period. There are also a small number of spoken comments, most of them in English. Some are tape recorded messages, others are reports by disciples that were later approved by the mother. And this part is arranged as per the theme. Part 2 consists of 32 conversations, not included elsewhere in the collected works. So that's the basic thing. So we'll read first these small little statements by the mother, which show us the light. And as we know that there are many people, I don't know, if you look at the spiritual messages which come all over the world, the Mother and Shubindu bring a refreshingly original understanding which takes into account the present or the scenarios through which the world passes of a life, and then gives it a direction not based on some standardized technique or methods or the usual things that we hear about God and spiritual life. So this is something very, at least for me, it was so refreshingly original. I am using a, you know, that it captivates you, because this is what you have been seeking, wanting. Otherwise, rest of the literature by and large, and I have read almost all of it, not just most of it, almost all of it. It by and large takes you along a similar paradigm where there is a ultimately a kind of division between the world and God. And yes, people have tried to bridge it by, you know, through various means, by various kinds of qualifications. But at the end of the day, it's not just realizing the divine. You also want to not just understand this life from the spiritual perspective, but also whether this life has its own consummation other than individuals realizing God in their own life. So the collective life of mankind. So all this and much more comes with regard to the Mother and Sri Aurobindo. So we'll just read some very beautiful small little statements. So first is the idea of the divine. The idea of the divine is not just he is a witness, but it is he who sets everything in motion. This is how the Isha Upanishad starts. Yat kincha jagatyam jagat. And this, it may sound, so what is the difference? There is a world of difference. It means the divine is the dynamic shakti working out in this world his own incalculable purpose. He is not just a silent witness where world is rolling on according to karma or whatever else, or a play of forces over which he has neither any control nor any say. And because divine is at the root of everything, including the world play, and takes full responsibility for it, therefore there is hope. So we have a small little message of the mother in 1952, which is very, very powerful, and I'll not talk about it. It's something to be meditated upon. It is more powerful than what I have read in one of my favorite Upanishads, the most favorite Upanishad, the Isha Upanishad. So here is a description she gives. It is He, the perfect Spirit, who fills all. See this little change? Who? Not that. A being, a personality. It is He, the perfect Spirit, who fills all. The perfect Spirit fills all. It is He who fills all. Who is He? The perfect Spirit. It is He, the perfect Spirit, who fills all. Just this meditation, it reminds me of, you know, from the Isha Upanishad, something which is comes little close. Yastu sarvani bhutani atme va bhud vijanata tatrko moha kashoka ekatvam anupashyata. It's about the self that has become all things. It is the Lord who sets all in motion from the depths of the being. It is His will that directs, His force that acts. So the natural question here would be that if the Lord is doing everything, then what is all this that we see today, and do we have any responsibility at all? So that's where Mother gives an explanation that yes, the original impulsion is from the Lord, but there are many formatures on the way. So simple example is, if the, this is something even as a practical advice I give. Don't leave things to spoken messages. Write them and give it an important message. Of course, people don't write because they are committed then. But if you give a spoken message, it gets distorted. And this is a game people used to play, still they play, that if there are 10 people standing in a row and the first person says something like, tell the person that you're wrong, and you gently whisper, by the time it reaches the 10th person, it is like give him a slap. So this is exactly how things get distorted, which create, even in ordinary life, so much confusion, chaos, because everything we speak, everything we hear, everything we think is a distortion of something else. So if one wants to avoid confusion, already there is enough in life, don't speak much. I mean, this is a different thing altogether. But personal conversations never resolve anything. They only complicate most of the time. So while the divine sets in motion everything, all the intermediary layers through which the message passes, it gets distorted. Therefore, what we see in the outer world is an illusion, not in the sense of something which does not exist, but something which was not intended, but it has come as a distortion in the place. So distortion can be set right. But if there is nothing, it was just a mental illusion or hallucination, then you have to quit it. So that is the difference, that if the divine is not just the witness, but He is the soul doer. So from here comes the yoga, that we have to tune ourselves to the divine will. At the service of the divine, we are. So what does it mean, service of the divine? It is the divine who decides, ordains and puts in motion, directs and accomplishes the action. So it means we have to receive the will and we have to know that it is the divine who has accomplished it. So the moment there is me, me has to change into ma. And it should be done from the very depth. Of course, there are some very beautiful questions. Everything is very beautiful. Like, who has made the divine? How long did it take to plan the universe? Who was there to execute it? She has replied beautifully. I'm not, because every question is beautiful and wonderful. So I'll skip a few pages. Which nowadays we are experiencing, or always the earth has experienced. This world is a chaos. in which darkness and light, falsehood and truth, death and life, ugliness and beauty, hate and love are so closely intertwined that it is almost impossible to distinguish one from the other. This last part is so important. One can easily feel that I am in the truth, and all over the world everybody believes they are in the truth. But how to know that one is in the truth? One has to get rid of all preferences. Otherwise one will never know the truth. Everybody believes. That's what Mother gave a very long conversation on. One of her shortest sayings, as you climb the staircase, you will see cling to truth. There are two messages written on the staircase, which leads to Sri Aurobindo's room and the other which leads to the mother's room. Of course, this one leads also to the mother's room. So one is cling to truth. And then she had to give a long understanding that, look, what is truth? It's not just what you believe to be true. I think it is truth. That's why there is so much chaos. And the other is very powerful. At least when I had read it first time, when I went to mother's room, it took me long to absorb it fully. And yes, when you read Mother and Sri Aurobindo's message, it should be, this is the truth. I need to understand it. At least that is the format that I have followed. Rather than, oh, how can it be so? That means I am arrogant. So, this is truth. I don't understand it. I must tune myself. And then the understanding comes very easily. So, one of them is, you want to correct what the Creator is doing? Now, as a youngster at 24, you believe that, you know what is right and you want the world to change, things to change. So I said, but all the time we try to do this with people, with everybody. And what does it really mean? You want to correct what the Creator is doing? And then slowly the whole meaning dawned. So many of her statements are very powerful. So this world is a chaos. Now all this she has explained elsewhere. I am just reading those which are part of Collected Works of the Mother, volume 15. So it's difficult to distinguish one from the other. But generally, this was asked to Mother, but generally, it's very difficult. So generally, how to understand? So she gave a very interesting little suggestion about it. She says, in general, all that leads to unity, truth, harmony, beauty, peace comes from the divine. And all that leads to quarrel, leads to all kinds of disorder, confusion, division comes from the undivine. This is, she said, very generally. And that's why even today I was explaining, because people then immediately ask, what about Mahabharata? Now you see, in Mahabharata, several effort Sri Krishna makes to ultimately make sure that there is no war. To that extent, he says all the Pandavas can, we live in one village each, though they deserve half the kingdom. De sako yadi to adha do. Aur isme bhi yadi badha ho, to de do keval paanch gaon, Pandav usme. So he says that they need just 5 villages. Can you give that? First step, he tries that. Second, he counsels them that, do you really want a war? So Draupadi is very one of them, because she is Kali's avatar, no? She has come to destroy. Then he goes to the, even after that, when Duryodhan refuses, then he tries a trick. The eternal divine trickster. So he takes hold of Karna and reveals to him the secret. You see, basically you are the elder brother. And if you agree to switch side, you will become the king. Pandavas will agree because they are for truth and justice. And because you are the eldest brother, if you come to this side, they will very happily, once they know you are the brother, they will happily agree for you to be the king. And in all likelihood, Duryodhan is climbing, jumping on your shoulders. He will think 10 times before going for war. Till every moment he tries, but then, things didn't work out, so there was a war. Same with, see, with Lord Rama, that right till the point, even when he has landed in Lanka, he sends his emissary, Angad, tell Ravan, I have not come to kill him or destroy him, though I am capable of doing so, but just he should return back Sita, no conditions. Just imagine. He doesn't say, ki, oh, I have come and I will see. Nothing. There is no trace of egoism. If you read through the Ramayana, it's something very beautiful. It is only and only when he completely refuses and tries to even capture Angad that the point is crossed. And even then, there are several times during the war that he is advised that you just return Sita, all this will stop. He refuses. So this, just to put the thing right, that always the divine action is towards peace, unity, harmony, beauty. But sometimes when all efforts fail, then war has to be, because otherwise it means you don't let the world advance in the direction it is destined to advance. So it is impossible to distinguish one from the other, almost impossible. Still more impossible to disentangle them. This is what we are talking about, disentangle them. You can't take an absolute stance. Sometimes you have to go through the process, so disentangle them and put an end to an embrace which has the horror of a pitiless struggle. We are experiencing this today. The Iran-US war, who is right, who is wrong? You have to go back into far history to see it. You can't just put it up today that, okay, US went and started the process, or Israel is bombing. No, it's not as simple as that. It means one is not aware of what has happened, what has been happening, what has drawn this, and how, why things have gone to this point. So all this and much more. So they are entangled. All the more keen because veiled, especially in human consciousness, where the conflict changes into an anguish for knowledge, for power, for conquest. A combat obscure and painful, all the more atrocious because it seems to be without issue, but capable of a solution. Now she is giving a possibility of a solution. Capable of a solution on a level above the sensations and feelings and ideas. Both sides must rise beyond. And that's why she says, in any quarrel, you are having a quarrel between husband and wife. You know, there's a story about Arab-Israel war. That once somebody is meditating, a lady, and suddenly God appears. So she says, he says, what do you want, bacha? He says, can you please put an end to the Arab-Israel war? So God says, my child, this has been going on for thousands of years. It's not easy. Can you ask something simpler, easier? He says, okay, how about resolving husband-wife quarrel? So God says, okay, bring me the map of Arab and Israel. Let me try that out. So if you look at it, the fight is over such silly things and such stupid things. I mean, Mother said people fight for the lower vital little things. And if you just rise a little above, there is nothing to fight about. And one simple solution I would say, that when a woman is angry, just say, Kali Mata, shant ho jao. She is Kali or Durga. When she is kind, she is Lakshmi. When she cooks meals, she is Annapurna. We have such lovely solutions. Because you can't. It's impossible. And if you get into a fit of rage, it's like you cannot. Because that is storm. Kali is anger. So you have to, simple remedies. And when, of course, if a man strays, so what does a woman do? Says, Krishna Bhagwan, come back to your... Because, see, this is a simple way to laugh it off. Not to become so serious as we become. Mother says we become too serious because we take life too seriously. Beyond the domain of the mind in the divine consciousness. So where we should unite in a the highest and the deepest. So supposing it's divine work, that should be our focus. In work for the mother, we are one. And therefore, we are one team. And if people are one team, they love each other. They don't fight with each other. It's the simplest logic. Okay. And then she gives a param assurance. The manifestation. Manifestation is all this creation. Why she uses the word creation? There are three words. Creation, evolution, manifestation. Creation means there is a creator. But what is that? We don't know. Evolution means that there is things which is coming up through a process. We may understand the process, but we don't know what is behind it. So both ways, we are at a loss. How it all began? What is behind it? But manifestation means there is a consciousness which is manifesting itself. Like when I'm writing, so I'm manifesting what is within me through the medium of writing. So manifestation is the word Madan Aurobindo uses. And naturally, it is full of challenges, difficulty for various reasons coming from the past, resistance of the present, of the limited consciousness, and of course, the challenges of the future. So she says the manifestation will overcome all difficulties. For manifestation means the overcoming of all difficulties. And Sri Aurobindo says that in chapter 1 of the Life Divine. He gives an example and he starts with that. What is the core problem of all things? He says harmony. And it's true. Harmony is so difficult. Even two human beings cannot harmonize, let alone collective harmony. But he gives example how it has been done. And he says that life is, if you really look at it closely, completely opposite to the matter. Matter is inert and life is movement. Life is identified with movement. Some kind of, nothing else, breathing, respiration is going on, exchange is going on, and matter is inert, just the opposite. But he says, see how nature has found the solution and harmonized inert substance with life which is ever in motion. So always ultimately manifestation means there will be a challenge and you will overcome. Actually, it can make life very fascinating. Personally, I feel whenever there is a challenge, people want to find quick solutions, easy solutions, runaway solutions, breakaway solutions, which is no solutions. Because you'll face the same challenge in another way at some other point of time. So, but rising to a higher consciousness is the solution. That's what she is pointing towards. And then she assures us that at this day, the divine consciousness is here at work upon earth more powerfully than it has ever been before. Actually, everything is so beautiful that. Okay, so then I'll come to what is the difference between the divine action and the way nature ordinarily acts? So, and how we many times like to act. So she says, in order to progress, nature destroys. You see, many past things have been destroyed. While the divine consciousness stimulates growth and finally transforms. That's how the mother acts. She has given the example of baking a bread where the baker adds yeast or a leaven to the flour and it gets puffed up, rises. Then you make bread. So this is how the divine love helps us to change and transform. Doesn't destroy things. What about the gods? Now we are having Navaratri. And everybody is going after the gods. What is the mothers? Gods exist. Goddesses exist. But that apart, about supramental yoga. What should be the attitude of the sadhak of the supramental? Supramental plane is beyond the plane of the gods. All the gods emerge from there. It is the sun from which all the rays emerge. Each ray becomes a distinct god as it moves into the play. So she says, those who still believe in gods can certainly continue to worship them if they feel like it. She is not saying yes or no, not banning anything or anybody. See, if they want to do it, they can continue to do it. But They must know that this creed and the worship has nothing to do with the teaching of Sri Aurobindo and no connection whatever with the supramental realization. So people can continue. She would never, many things people continue. So if people want to continue, you see all kinds of messages will come suddenly on groups because we are habituated, used to, which is understandable. But then it is not this which will lead to the supramental realization, because it is something, gods belong to the cosmic domain. The supramental belongs to the transcendent. This is a new force which has come. Even gods have to adjust to that. They have to grow upscale. The gods used to come when mother would give meditation in the ashram. They would sit over the ledge. Mother has described them. They would come and watch the new Leela. And then one day when as the supermind was, not supermind, overmind was descending more and more. And then she asked them, would you like to participate? Then some of them agreed, but not without taking a human body. Like Ganesha said that I'll get money for the work. Shiva said I'll destroy what needs to be destroyed. But Krishna agreed to fuse with the human body, and she describes his personality fused with Sri Aurobindo's personality. He participated by fusing with Sri Aurobindo, taking an earthly body again, which is something very amazing. So, yet, worship has to go, and it is understandable in any spiritual life, anywhere in the world. I know so many movements. You may not believe in gods. Gods are a fact of existence, even logically. But basically, the surrender, the faith has to be completely to the master. This is a well-known teaching in India. All over, I am aware of many movements. You just surrender to the master, have faith. Because he becomes for you the conduit of the divine. And gods are there. He will work. He will tell the gods what is to be done. They are like brothers and sisters in that state. Because they are also going to listen to him. Gods don't act independent of the divine will. So this is the principle. Believing in them is a different thing. But she is speaking of worshipping. Gods exist regardless of our belief or not belief. So this is the difference. She is not saying gods don't exist. She is not saying those who want to worship them should not do them. Each one is free and stage of development. But once you have the divine, or even the master or the guru, it is the well-known ancient teaching of India, your surrender and faith has to go completely. It should not be in an exclusivist sense that others are inferior or others don't have a right. No. But for you, this is the path. Whoever it be. They are very nice. I mean, people say, how is mother saying this? Well, though that question is absurd. But nevertheless, there is a famous line by Tulsidas. So Tulsidas was once told by someone that, you know, Lord Krishna is greater than Lord Rama. Because Rama has only 12 qualities, Krishna has all 16. Rama cannot dance, Rama cannot paint, art, music. He is a warrior. Krishna is warrior plus all this. So he is a full, all the qualities. So Tulsidas goes and sees the idol of Krishna and he says, I'll speak the Hindi one, then translate it. He says, Kaha kahu main aapki chabi birajo nath. He says, what can I describe your image which is so beautiful? But the next line he adds, Tulsi mastak tab nave dhanush baan lo hath. I cannot surrender or bow down to you. You have to take the dhanush baan because for me that's my gate. And exactly as the story goes that he took that form, because that's been always been the teaching. So sometimes people ask, why is mother saying so? This is nothing new. This is true of all true authentic spiritual paths. Religion is different, religiosity is different. And therefore she adds, she is not saying gods don't exist. She is not saying destroy the gods of any. No. Even the gods have to make their surrender to the supreme if the divine creation is to be realized upon earth. So this is the truth that she reveals. Now again, if you take the larger landscape, everybody has its place. Again, she's not saying start forcing this or that idea on people, but she's speaking of turning to spiritual life is a serious business. Don't mix things. And there is a very interesting thing about all kinds of things we do to celebrate certain festivals. And there is a long, really 10 lines question. And the person asked that, lastly, what should be our attitude toward these festivals? And mother's answer is 3 words. Men like festivals. That's it. Therefore, they have created. It is so true. You don't want to live that spirit. On Deepavali, I'm talking of the Indian context, you will play gambling, you'll do gambling at night. Isn't it? People do gambling at night. I don't know now they do or not. Karte hain abhi. Jua khelte hain raat ko. See? They do gambling. Some communities, yes. But it is an accepted part as if. You create pollution, noise and say all this is a very wonderful thing. Now, fortunately, all this is reducing. That's what I came to know, which is very nice. In the name of holy, you do all kinds of things. We have also done it. You take cannabis, dance like a fool. Now, men give a justification and an excuse. Many of these dances were like matchmaking also. Because these are people mix things, which is okay. For an average human consciousness, perfectly fine. Nobody should stop anyone. But if one asks its place in terms of the higher spiritual truth, then one must understand that Deepavali is lighting the inner lamp in the thick of night. It's a symbol which we all should do. And the reminder that eventually, however dense the night, the light will always be victorious. Holy is that whatever be your colors, ultimately there is only one fellow who is coloring us, and that is Krishna. That's how one of the saints has sung, that there are so many different colors which are coming on us, but ultimately who is the player? It is Krishna. But now it becomes very dirty, festivals, commemorations. So very often they are used as an excuse. Then this was something very interesting. When people speak against you, somebody asked the mother, I feel as if a big flame with many tongues is arising in me, and the person in front becomes docile. This is an experience I have had. And people would say, no, 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 this is not mother's way. So I had to quote these two passages and send it. And this here, mother's answer, it must be Kali's force which you evoke. The other one is, I want to ask you a question concerned with my reaction to the inconsideration and vulgarity in X's letter about Sri Aurobindo. I remember an occasion many years ago when a lady friend of mine spoke unbecomingly of both of you. I verbally choked her off at once, but the indignation within me went on burning. It was like a sword of fire leaping out of my chest, striking and striking through the hours. My mind could serve only to direct it accurately. It had itself little part in the actual violence. The next day, the lady had a terrific attack of diarrhea. Any idea whose letter is this? Whose experience? This is Amal Kiran's letter. It is there in his book, The Mother, Past, Present, Future, what he was experiencing. And it describes a similar blaze began to go out of my chest yesterday on reading Y's letter. I had no scruple in directing it at his journal, as if to consume its future to ashes. But although I also struck out at Y himself as if to destroy him, I did not encourage the fiery onslaught. I started wondering if it was right to attack like that a person. And then he describes a long letter. At times I thought I was perfectly justified. At other times it seemed to me that I should offer my sword of fire to you and Sri Aurobindo and leave it to you both. And it goes on. It's a long letter, very relevant to what was happening here in the ashram some time back. Mother's reply. Hold the breath. It is evidently the working of the Kali force that has lit and is directing this fire in you. There is nothing wrong in its action. It is not an anger personal to you, but the wrath of a divine power, and it must be allowed to act. In fact, I think you could not stop it from burning in you, even if you wanted to stop it. This man has drawn it on himself, and there is nothing wrong in what is happening. He alone is responsible. Of course, it must not be used for any personal aim or in any self-regarding way. His mother's answer. I don't know what Gandhiji used to say. All these gospel. There is something very similar happening even in the Iran war, US war. There are things inside which have drawn this kind of. It's not just that suddenly countries are, whatever be the outer reason. If you go into the history and what has been happening since 80s, one will understand. These things don't happen. Like Pakistan breaking up. Same time it had the independence as India. But look at where it is going on the brink. Because it brings upon yourself the action of the gods. So this is how Mother Kali works. Behind all destructions, whether the immense destructions of nature, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, cyclones, floods, etc., or the violent human destructions, wars, revolutions, revolts, I find the power of Kali, who is working in the earth atmosphere to hasten the progress of transformation. She is destroying what needs to be destroyed. And then she says, all that is not only divine in a sense, but also divine in realization, is by its very nature above these destructions and cannot be touched by them. Thus the extent of the disaster gives the measure of the imperfection. The true way of preventing the repetition of these destructions is to learn their lesson and make the necessary progress. And she adds something very interesting. All that is good, truthful and progressive is never destroyed. Stories like that, Kali is going and even the gods are running, because gods also have a little chore inside, no, sometimes. Indra, those kind of gods, not the great gods. So then they all pray to Mahadev that please do something. Mahadev says, this is beyond actually. Once I have sat with my breast and she has stopped, but now she will understand and she won't stop. So she is, all the asuras, the gods, they are all running helter-skelter. So then they pray, so Mahadev becomes a little baby. It's called Batuk Avatar. Google search, you'll find. It becomes a baby. And the girl, after whom, you know, is one of the daughters of Lord Shiva. Heard about it? Lord Shiva is a daughter. Ashok Sundari. So she is the one who has been abducted by the titans, and then suddenly out of Uma comes Kali. And she does that, and she wouldn't listen to anyone, and she has saved the child, but now she wants to destroy the entire Asura lot. And the gods also, because wherever there is, then she doesn't care which side you are. If there is evil, it gets destroyed. So then at that point of time, Shiva comes as a child, and initially she bypasses, and then the child cries. And then suddenly out of her emerges a heart of Mamata, the motherly love, tender love. And she immediately changes back to her Gauri form and takes him into his lap. This is a not too well-known story, but it's there. Batuk Avatar of Lord Shiva. And they're the only thing. So in Kali also, we have two Kalis. Many Kalis, but two main Kalis. One is the Rudra Kali and the other is Bhadra Kali. So the more common Kali is the one who destroys. But Bhadrakali is very auspicious. She is very loving. Intense love. Intense love. Love which is beyond measure. If she is with you, nothing can come. She is like, you can imagine a human mother protecting, and now it is the divine mother in the most fierce form. Nothing can touch you. And that once she takes you in a lap, then it doesn't matter what you have been, what you are. She will take care of everything. Bhadrakali. So, that's how Kali is, intense love, but outwardly the power that destroys everything that stands between us and the divine. What about gods with multiple hands? He says in the supermind, they don't have multiple hands. That part she has made very clear. Actually, it is a artist's way of depicting also that these are the powers. But sometimes in vision one can see these many hands. But that is because on the vital plane that's how the symbol operates. But if we go back to the original Purusha in the Purushukta, it's like the human, from which the human form has been derived. What about the adverse forces? He says, adverse and hostile forces are forces which apparently create problems. They create difficulties, they create obstacles on the path. So people often wonder that why are they there at all? But if you read through the stories where adverse forces have been very active, like the story of Nal and Damayanti, now they basically come to not just test our sincerity, but to make it perfect. You have an opening, they will come. Of course, they will build a whole Himalayas where the problem was little. That's what they do. But that must have been the letter. That they clap a whole Himalaya, whereas something was very simple. So human beings, when they are under the influence of adverse forces, can create impossible situations. There is a problem, but it is something which can be solved easily. So she says, each time that we have made a decisive step in our spiritual progress, the invisible enemies of the divine always try to take the revenge. This is something which I have seen in many. I can't say because I don't know the life of many other people. But even recently, someone who just said, I have left his job, everything, finally. He said, now I am joining the ashram. And he told me, I have started full-time work. And sure enough, court case, this, that started. I said, so now you are confirmed. All of us, I have also gone through, the not court case, but in some way. Because then immediately you are like thrown into a cauldron. So people don't realize that it's not so easy to just live here. You have to go through that phase. So the old sadhaks used to speak about the ashram context. Because ashram is the most intense. In a way it applies even to yoga wherever it is being done. But particularly because ashram, the intensity of force is maximum. So the sadhaks would say, if you join the ashram, come to the ashram first year, just put your feet in ground. Don't talk about sadhana, don't start doing, you know, I'm sitting for meditation. Be grounded, stay on ground. I've seen people come and they start sitting for meditation for long, right in front of the samadhi, as if something is special, and then suddenly go away like that. It's not easy. So first stay grounded. Then for the next 2-3 years, just find your moorings. Orient your, keep orienting. Because it's a katha, it's important, you know, it has to be cleared. Even before the Gita, the famous war, Kurukshetra war, what does Shri Krishna do to Arjun? He attacks him, influences him by his own Vaishnavi Maya. All his weaknesses suddenly come. Oh, I'll not fight, they are my own people, I am going to take sannyas. Deliberately, because he knows that halfway through, suddenly he will say, I want to liquid the war. Then it will be dangerous. So there is a first major catharsis which is done. Then purification goes on. But it's like, that's why their role is there, these adverse forces. But you have to go through that phase. You have to go through that purification process, become one-pointed. Each time we have to make a decisive step, the invisible enemies of the divine always try to take their revenge, and they will do each time there is a new progress. But once you get the hold of it, you learn how to navigate. It's mother's name and surrender and growth in sincerity. These are the things. Keep on the aspiration regardless. And when they cannot injure the soul, they strike the body. So this also they try to make you ill. But all their efforts are in vain and will finally be defeated, for the divine grace is with us. This is what we must remember. But some people, that's why people who coming to ashram for a few days is very nice. But if you want to join, think 100 times. That's why Shurbindu, in fact, he says the rejections are more. Have you seen an ashram? Most of the places people welcome. More the merrier. Shurbindu's rejections are more. Because it's not easy. It's easy to come, spend few days. And it's difficult to understand what goes on in the life of people who start living here. Because the intensity opens the doors of both kinds. On one side, of the highest possibility. So the aspiration, you know, the progress is much faster. On the other side, the challenges which were hidden inside, they also come up in a much more way. So what opens the door, sir? It is jealousy. The worst. Jealousy can take many routes. One of them is, oh, that person is progressing, I am not progressing, divine is more partial to that. Don't compare, contrast, see your own. So it is jealousy. Jealousy, it can go to any extent, you know. Oh, why such a such person is more in demand? Why such a... It can completely, because you know that ambition, jealousy is the other side of that, possessiveness, ambition. Selfish dissatisfaction, that is the other part. Why we are dissatisfied? Actually, in one sentence, one word, it is selfishness. There can be no doubt about it. There is a very famous story of the mother with about Gangadharan. He used to live in that, inside a small little room, maybe 1/4 size of this, below the staircase. You can imagine, staircase is there and there is a space in which a little room was made. It was dark, there is no ventilation. Gangadharan had such lovely supramental experiences, and he has written the famous 108 names of Sri Aurobindo. His experiences were supramental, authenticated by the mother. So one day mother was going, had gone to this place, I am forgetting, was it Kirod house or one of them, and then she saw he was standing with folded hands. He had come as a young child, he had run away from home. That was the state in which a very young boy when he came here. And so when he sees the mother come here, he is all tears. And mother says, what are you doing here? He said, mother, I am staying here. Mother's with. Here? Amrita was with her. She gave him a good this thing, dressing. You have kept him here? In this small little room? He was the manager, the only manager of the ashram. Amrita. Amrita's way was mother, mother, mother. So Gangadharanji says, mother, mother, I am very happy. I am very happy here. I am so happy here. This is the path through which they have walked, who have gone before us. Now we think of all kinds of luxury and all that. But we have to, when you listen to these stories, you understand how people have gone the way. Selfish. Wanting something for myself. Dissatisfaction. Often we'll hear people say, but they have this in their house, I don't have. Selfish dissatisfaction. And hurt vanity. This also one goes through, and then, it, because when we come here, everybody thinks I am someone or something. If nothing else, I am. People come sometimes and they say, I want to join the ashram. So I say, what do you want to do? Said, no, no, I have a background in this, that, my qualification. One person came with a biodata, big biodata. He said, I want to teach in the ashram. I said, there are so many people who want to teach in the ashram. You are qualified if you want to learn in the ashram. Teaching comes later. Once she had gone, Kavita had gone to Ravindraji, I want to clean the samadhi. Everybody wants to, you know, do samadhi work. So he says, there are already 500 people whose name I have written. She was, you know, Vakpatu. She said, you write my name as 501. It's okay. At least the name is there. Doesn't matter whether you get or not. So this is how, because there also it becomes a competition. Oh, somebody is nearer, somebody is working in the room, they must be more advanced. Nothing of this kind is valid. But people begin to believe, they begin to think like that, and therefore, you know, everybody is put in place. So she says, selfish desire and hurt vanity that open the doors of the consciousness to the hostile attacks by pulling one out of the divine's protection. So humility is the safeguard. I am nobody, nothing. She alone is everything. What people may say, don't take it too seriously. If they criticize you, you may still give a little thought that whether something is wrong. But if they praise you, don't take it seriously. That is most dangerous. So I have adopted a thing that if somebody praises you, I start imagining, now, not now, but at one point, that there is a ditch being built right next to me. Will I trip into it? Because this was an advice somebody, some old mystic saying. So you should be careful. And of course, criticism also, what does it matter? Who knows us? Who knows that people don't know themselves? Only the divine knows us. And he, fortunately, does not judge us. That's one thing very beautiful. He does not judge us, criticize us. He only helps us advance. So we have to refuse the wrong movements if you want to be away from that. It is a great ignorance that makes a being answer to the suggestions of the forces of darkness and destruction. Lot of suggestions go away. Oh, look at the ashram, what is there? If you look at people, long back, Rishabh Chand said this very beautifully. He told Mother, if people look at us, nobody will want to stay. If people look at you, nobody will want to go. So very careful one has to be, because one will meet all these challenges. And then, Ari, why have I come? Maybe that place was better somewhere else. This is how the forces work. They will enter through some back door. Start, if you listen to them, they'll start hammering, start showing you, see, don't you see this? Don't you see that? Don't you see this person? You have to say, I have come only for one person. My Lord and Queen and Master and Mother and Father and everything. Then you are safe. So she says, with it, what is needed? One is humility. The other is, with a true sense of gratitude for the Divine's infinite mercy, one would be saved from such dangers. To me it is very simple. You have called me to the path. It is enough to remain grateful for my life, whatever, for lives, whatever may happen. Just imagine what goal he has placed before us. If you remain grateful, humble, sincerity of course, vigilance, you go through. So this is what she advises. So why these hostile forces are there at all? And Mother says that elsewhere also. Hostile forces are tolerated in the world only because they put man's sincerity to the test. Why one is here? They put it put to test. The day that man becomes integrally sincere, they will pass away, for there will no longer be any reason for their existence. One particular thing that she has particularly cautioned about is adverse forces is sexual desires. So one of them is, of course, he has said vanity. The other, she says, these adverse forces are connected with sexual desire. They live on the energy wasted when the act takes place. They grow strong and fat. And even a thought, a mental or vital desire is sufficient to let them come in and settle in the atmosphere. A lot of anger develops in people who, you know, get into that mode. It takes time for all these things to go, but one should know what is what. And the ego, your ego, at the slightest thing that displeases it, is in the habit of opening the door of your being to an evil spirit of arrogant and impudent disbelief, which passes its time in throwing mud and filth on all that is sacred and beautiful, and especially on the aspiration of your soul and the help from the Divine's grace. There was one of the well-known ladies, Utadi, used to get into those violent moods. Once she would throw away the white roses given by the mother. Ha! I don't love you. That goes away, and mother sends to her a card, and Vasudhaben comes and says, do you want to know what mother is? She started packing in Golconda. I'm going. This used to be her state several times. And then, you want to know what mother has said? She said, okay, you can tell me. It doesn't make a difference. She says, the mother told me, mother has given a card for you. And then she has told me, she does not know how much she loves me. That was enough for her to, you know, cancel. That is how she, because she could see inside the deeper aspiration and the outer difficulty. And those who want freedom, I want to do my way. First lesson that one learns here is obedience. And obedience in strange ways, because we all come with a certain idea. And many of us have been in a certain position to influence things, do things according to our idea. So people who never had that situation are very easily, they get into the system. But when we come with our idea of doing things, that's badly hit, because it's ego. We are not here for that. We are here for something else. So she says, after all, what is freedom? To go about doing whatever you like? But do you know what is you? Do you know what is your own will? Do you know what comes from you and what comes from elsewhere? Well, if you had a strong will, I could have allowed you to work. But it is not like that. It is only impulses that move you, which people take to be freedom, that I'll do as I like. And they are also not your own. They come from outside and make you do all sorts of stupid things. You fall into the hands of the Rakshasas. Rakshasas suck blood. If somebody lives with you, one of them, your mother has spoken of it, that somebody who fell very seriously ill, because you are living, someone who can take away. It's not like they're not like Dracula teeth, but their just presence is enough. First they make you do stupid things and then they laugh. If you have a strong will, if your will, your impulses and all else are centered around the psychic, that whatever others may have done, I will do what is true to my own deepest truth, my own aspiration. I should be sincere to the divine within me. It doesn't matter what others are doing. It's their business, their lookout, their problem. I have to see this is my goal, whether this is going to be take me closer to mother or farther from her. If you have a strong will, if your will, your impulses and all else are centered around the psychic, then and then alone can you have some taste of liberty and freedom. Otherwise, you are a slave of your egoism, your vanity, your presumptuous ambition, and a toy in the hands of the Rakshasas who allure you with brilliant images in their attempt. Ah, you are somebody very great. The brilliant images. What do they know? These foolish people. They'll throw all kinds of things. Not always unsuccessful to possess you. If you allow them, after some time, you can completely lose the way. The mind and thoughts are possessed. Lastly, many people who get into practicing occultism, going to this master, that master, trying out everything, hey, it's freedom, wideness. Wideness means you understand that there are several things, each one has a right to follow their own way. At the same time, you have to be faithful to what you have chosen, your soul has chosen. So this is a long question about some experience where one sees different parts, some dark things. So the mother explains, this is the disadvantage of placing oneself under the influence of several occult forces, even the seemingly spiritual. Because they may pull you in different directions. In the past, one was recommended, not without reason, to choose one spiritual master. There are so many stories. I also recounted Baba Farid's story where, you know, you are being given a great realization by another master. He said, no, I don't want that. My master will give me whatever is necessary. And people don't understand this, so they go here, there, to all kinds of, you know, ashram, come back, oh, this is beautiful. And maybe one is not serious about yoga, I don't know. But if one wants to go safely on this path, any spiritual path, then take one master. And to take great care not to see any others. So she's not only saying, in one place one person used to fall sick, mother went, and suddenly she saw the photograph of some other master, and she tells, she says that you should remove it, because if you want, you keep, but this will bring adverse influence. And he is another spiritual master. There was another Champak Lalji when he went to, what was, Jhunjhunu, I think, where there were all kinds of gods and goddesses' image kept in the relics room. He went in, when he saw, he started picking up and threw them all outside. Hong Kong, I know that when he went there, people were singing bhajans. All kinds of bhajans people sing, no, this, that. And he suddenly walked away. Imagine Hong Kong, night, Champak Lalji walking out alone. I mean, it was safe. Now I don't know under Chinese influence what it has become. But it was safe. But people are there for flesh trade and this and that. And then the person, he only recounted me the story. He came after him, catching him. Maharaj chaliye, Maharaj chaliye. And then they said, but we were singing bhajans of God. He said, not the God that I know. So-called modern wisdom, which springs from ignorance, is open to all kinds of influences which are sometimes contradictory, and the result is a great confusion. And this was to avoid a mixture of influences which has serious disadvantages. And then when people used to get into it, what would the mother advise? She would say, now there is only one solution, to go beyond all human representations and approach the Supreme directly, with the utmost sincerity you are capable of, and await the result. There have been instances where people said, I know someone myself. She said, okay, now you turn directly to the Supreme, no more through. So this, the spiritual path she's speaking of, ordinary life is a different thing, all these things. Ordinary life you are exploring, so you go here, there. But once you put your feet onto the path, then one should be faithful to the path, to the teaching, to what the master has taught, which means one should read before one even becomes aware of the inner guidance. And then one will reach fast with minimum difficulties. They will still be there. One must cultivate humility, sincerity, vigilance, surrender, gratitude. All these things save you from the all kinds of forces which come to test us and take us away. Jai Ma.